like to welcome everyone to our next episode of Two Men in the Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. It's me, Jamie, along with Pastor Bob Brandon, bringing the word to you live in a color, Bob. By your shirt tonight, we've got all the primaries going.
Look how stunning that is, all those islands of the Philippines. Yeah, this long, skinny one there, that's Palawan, where the orphanage is. This is Luzon in the north. My wife was born there. And that's, Davao. What's that island? Mindanao in the south. And that's where my brother-in-law does a ministry to tribal people.
I did not realize that was the Philippines.
Yeah, and in the middle, all those, that's the Visayan Islands, where one of Kathy's sisters lives.
And that was a very interesting DVD that you played for us at church the other day. That was very, I would have never realized the power of Christianity in the Philippines.
Yeah, they're a great country. We pray for them often, of course, my wife being Filipino, but they're a great country, great people.
So, we just finished up with chapter 27, Little Deception Going On, and after we finished that podcast, you and I were talking, and I'm starting to get a clear, or a more clear picture of what was going on, but I tell you, Bob, that one was, it's hard to really understand sometimes what the message is that's written there.
Let's go into that just a little bit. Why? I understand the issue you just described, but I'm asking you, why is that an issue? Because the main theological point is God is superintending his blessing to come through the right channel. Okay, that's inexorably going to happen. He said when they were
one
born,
way or the other, right?
God said the younger, you know, is going to be the guy. I'm not quoting that directly, but the older shall serve the younger and so on. So that's been, in a sense, announced in heaven. Okay, so you're watching it work out on earth. So I think what causes the discord, why you would say that one was tough, is not because you can't understand the message. It's because your own heart gets broken over discord between heaven and earth. They ought to just be the same. Isaac should have known. He knew what God had said. Mm-hmm. Same as Rebecca knew.
Right.
Rebecca took it to heart. Isaac didn't. And that creates discord. And so then you're watching your heroes, you know, Rebecca and Jacob, deceiving about things. And that causes angst. It disturbs you.
Right.
You know, there is discord between heaven and earth, and it should be one thing. And the reason I'm emphasizing it that way, recall the Lord's Prayer. Thy will be done in heaven and on earth.
Right.
And on earth, we screw it up so often.
Over and over, right?
And it hurts. You know, it hurts your soul.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is, we don't want to excuse the actions of Rebecca and Jacob, but we see God's purposes being worked out.
And as you pointed out in the last podcast, it's God's will, man's way. Did I remember that correctly?
That's right. That's functional.
Right.
But it's a rough road.
Far from perfect.
Yeah. God's work, God's way is an awesome path.
And so now we're gonna keep the story going. Jacob has just been, I don't want to say exiled, but he's been sent away.
Yeah, we don't want to say exiled,
right?
Because and you're right about describing it that way, but he's going back to get a wife where Rebecca came from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not in any way exiled, but it is for it. I understand what you're saying, because it is for, there's another pretty large motive.
Right.
This guy's safety.
Kill him.
And you get the idea, if this comes to a smackdown, Jacob's going to lose.
Right.
I mean, Esau's this hunter. He's this, you know, wild man. Jacob's not going to do very good in a fist fight.
No,
cards, if it's chess, you know, he can beat you, but he isn't going to... Although, we'll see when he comes to Laban. He's not weak. Jacob is not... He's not a homeboy.
Right.
He picks this rock off the well and waters, you know, everybody's camel by himself. And it, the text describes, usually all the shepherds go over there to lift that rock together. So Jacob's not a homeboy. But you still get the idea. Esau probably could have taken him if it was just a throwdown.
That's kind of the sense that I get. So shall we dive in?
Yes. Let's read. This is a shorter chapter verse-wise. So, chapter 28. So, Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father. From there take yourself a wife from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful, then multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he also give you the blessing of Abraham, to you and to your descendants with you, that you may possess the land of your sojournings, which God gave to Abraham." Then Isaac sent Jacob away. He went to Padan Aram, to Laban, son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take to himself a wife from there. And that when he blessed him, he charged him, saying, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan." And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Padan Aram. So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father Isaac. And Esau went to Ishmael and married, besides the wives that he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth. Let's pause there for a sec, actually. Okay. That's a unique section before we read the rest of the chapter. What are you picking up from that?
So after all this, Isaac now is going to bring Jacob in and go ahead and
give him the marching orders. I mean, now Jacob is the guy. He does not rebel against that. No. And he blesses him strongly here, you know, with Abraham's blessing. Like,
well, it's
you're
the covenant
guy.
Again.
He reiterates the covenant with great detail and lays it on Jacob. So he's, you know, Isaac is at least faithful in that regard.
Oh yeah, it's I don't know that I feel a sense of a 180, as you would call it here, but he's definitely on board.
He's on board.
He is on board at this point, as opposed to where he was at just a chapter ago.
Yeah, and where he was a chapter ago is where anyone would be had they been deceived about something that important.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I would be that way.
Irritated. Well,
hopefully, I wouldn't be so spiritually dull that you have to deceive me. But if
right.
you did, I'd be ticked
yeah.
that you did it that way.
Yeah, it wouldn't feel good.
Yeah, no one likes that.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so what about the second half of that?
So, Jacob follows the orders.
Yeah.
He obeys.
Jacob's pretty alert, yeah.
And he does exactly, and it says that here, that Esau saw that Jacob had obeyed his father and mother and had gone to Padan Aram.
There you go.
But, so when Esau sees that, it's like he's trying to hedge his bet. You know, he's not trying to put all his...
You're right, and that's the point of the text. He's trying to make good now.
Right.
Now he realizes what was on the table that he sold years ago. But
he doesn't get rid of that.
He keeps it.
Right? He keeps it because his wives, it says, and Esau went to Ishmael and married besides the wives.
Yeah, he's already...
Had. He's not getting rid of them. He's not saying, okay, I'm pointed this direction now.
Yes, and there's a great lesson for those cozying up to the faith of Christianity. There's some decisions, that you can't redo.
Right.
And when God offers salvation to you, be very careful about refusing that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense in which he may take that offer off the table.
Right.
And you can try all you want afterwards, and you're not going to get that. There's a sense of that.
Right.
Because you can tell Esau's trying here, and it's like, doesn't matter. It's done.
Well, and the route he's taken, he's, as we talk, and as you shared with us, when he's confronted with the truth, he doesn't face it.
Yeah, he did not correspond to the truth.
No, he just kind of hedged his bed up a little bit. And
yeah, he tried to remold it.
He's trying to...
All right, you're right. So that's the point of that little section. Now let's finish up this chapter.
All right, I'm going to write an A+ down there.
All right. All right, you get a C-9 single up the middle. Okay. Chapter 28, verse 10. Then Jacob departed from Beersheba and went toward Haran. He came to a certain place and spent the night there because the sun had set. He took one of the stones of the place, put it under his head, and lay down in that place. He had a dream. Behold, a ladder was set on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Behold, the Lord stood above it. It said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give it to you, to your descendants. Your descendants shall also be like the dust of the earth. You shall spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And in you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I'm with you, will keep you wherever you go, will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob awoke from the sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning. He took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar, poured oil on its top. He called the name of that place Bethel. However, previously the name of that city had been Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, I return to my father's house in safety. Then the Lord will be my God. This stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you.
Okay.
That's the rest of chapter 28.
So let's talk about verse 12.
Okay.
Is that... What do you see there? Because I see that's basically... When I can't remember what book it's in, but when it says, let them see what I see, and their eyes are open, they see all the angels in the hills.
That's right. That's 2 Kings with Elisha.
With Elisha.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get the same kind of sense here that Jacob's eyes in his dream are being opened.
Yeah, he's having a vision.
Right.
He's having a, he's seeing heaven. Yeah, no question.
And the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father, Abraham, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. Now the covenant's coming further, right?
That's exactly right. It's the same. We've read that how many times with Abraham and Isaac, right? He is reiterating that promise to Abraham with a lot of oomph.
He's there now, right?
I'm doing this. Yeah. Yeah, now, but I want to back up for a sec. Okay. Back to verse 12, and then we'll go forward again with what you were saying. It says ladder in verse 12, but it's not, you can even see in your study note, it don't picture, you know, like your ladder you have in your garage. That's not exactly what he's seeing. It's more like, I've showed you this picture, I know, in my book about the ancient Near East. It's more like a ziggurat.
It's
more like a steps, like ascension. A stairway. Yeah, like a pyramid that's more like a step pyramid, not a smooth. So, Charles Ryrie's note says, like, in other words, more like a stairway. And yeah, it's more like that than a ladder. And the reason I'm emphasizing that is because often in our podcast, we've been bringing up the seed of the serpent.
Mm-hmm.
And we've showed how a number of those genealogies lead to Babylon. And that's a dominant theme all through the scriptures. You know, beware of Babylon. That's the rival kingdom to the kingdom of God. Babylon, as a city, had a number of nicknames. And we say these in church frequently. One of them was the city on many waters. I know that surprises people because today you're like going, he's in the desert. You know, what do you... Well, the Euphrates River went right through Babylon. They had tributaries and so on. So it was called the City on Many Waters. It was also called the City of Refuge. But it's the essence of its name. If you asked a Babylonian, we understand your nicknames and all that, but like if you went to New York City, what does New York mean? It doesn't actually mean the Big Apple. It means there's a city in England called York. And this is New York.
Right.
It's not in England, okay? So they wouldn't say, yeah, Babylon actually means the city on many waters or the city of refuge. They would say those are our nicknames. But Babylon actually means the gates of heaven.
Really?
So here's Jacob, right? The forefather of Israel, going, this is the gate. It's not in Babylon. It's here in Israel. And the gates of heaven, you know, that's where heaven and earth touch, right? He's seeing angels going up and down this. In other words, this is where God communicates with earth.
A union station kind of.
This is the control room.
Right.
Right? This is the, I don't know a better way to say it than control room, but this is the main place. Beth-El, house of, Beth means house, El means God. This is the house of God. It's in Israel. It's not in Babylon. It's here. And so God then reiterates his promise like you were bringing up. I just had to get that point in there.
Well, yeah.
Because that's the imagery that's in. When you read ladder, you just kind of, something in my garage. That's not what he's seeing. He's seen a thing very much like you would see in Babylon, but it's not Babylonian. It's from God. This is God's house.
I had a picture like a Grand Central Station, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, in our
yeah.
New Babylonian
and
culture.
Way do we get there, Jamie, but Jesus in the New Testament is actually going to say, I'm... I'm the stairway. I'm the bridge between heaven and earth.
So
it says that very clearly.
So then,
John.
Theologically, when that is a reference back to this, because I know what you're talking about.
To this scene, yes.
And getting back to who the reader is at this time, they get all that. They
don't get the Jesus part, but
right,
they get
right.
this is Bethel. This is a big place.
So
this
where we see ladder, they're not going to see ladder.
No, they're seeing more stairway kind of thing, but more stairway, more like a ziggurat, not like a narrow, you know, like in your house where, you know, two people
right.
abreast is cramped.
Right.
It's a big deal. Big, broad expanse.
And again, with the covenant, but the covenant... It's interesting as we've heard the covenant, and how far back, you know, give me an idea year-wise, because that's one thing I have a hard time in the Bible.
Oh, with Abraham?
Yeah, how
no,
long ago
that's
was
not
that covenant?
That, you know, those guys are living, Abraham, from the time God clarified that covenant with him, maybe 100 years. And then Isaac, his life, you know, 150, 180. So you're not, biblically speaking, you're not that far removed.
But when we talk about it, that's still 250 years.
Yeah, probably, something like that. Yep. Maybe 200, maybe. We're estimating these ages, but yeah.
Let's say a couple hundred.
Yeah, it's more than 100.
Yeah. And it's been said over and over yep. and over and over again and reiterated. And now it's kind of fulfilling.
It's driving the story.
Yeah.
There's a background, you know, never forget the background of the seed of the woman versus the seed of the woman. But what's driving that automobile, if you will, mm-hmm. use that imagery, is that covenant.
Right. And now it's starting to blossom and it's starting to bloom, and now the covenant is going to, we're going to start seeing the petals on each, you know, as the covenant unfolds, and see the reality that goes with that covenant, that it wasn't just an empty promise that God made to Abraham. It wasn't just a pipe dream. It was his will. And now 200 years down the road here it's starting to just now come to fruition. Am I there?
You're there. But what I want to add to that theologically is we often think so smallly, so narrowly concerning the Lord. What he's actually doing is building a nation. Mm-hmm. And this is going to mm-hmm. take generations. It's not just for Abraham, the guy. It's not just for Isaac, that guy. It's right. not just for Jacob. It's going to be a nation. I mean, remember Moses writing this to Israelites, a nation coming out of Egypt. When you guys are the fulfillment of this promise, mm-hmm. we are going into that land. You know, I know you guys don't know anything about battle or anything, you know, a bunch of peasants.
Right.
We are going in there. That was promised from day one. You see how far we've actually even come? You all started from one forefather, Abraham. So he's showing scenes where where Abraham's powerful and Isaac's powerful with Abimelech. You know, they have the mm-hmm. favor of God right. upon them to encourage the Israelites. You know, this is where we're going. This is the whole promise. And then, even then, remember when God shows Abraham the stars of heaven, it's actually you and me fulfilling that. It's not even just the nation of Israel. It's people from every tribe and nation on earth. Mm-hmm. Right? God is building a gigantic, a universal kingdom, not just a little 100-mile by 20-mile chunk of land on the Mediterranean. He's building a universal kingdom.
And isn't that awesome to be reading about where it started?
Well, it is, because as you do this, you're, you know, what we get taught in school, like say you go to, you know, wherever you go, K mm-hmm. through 12, you know, and then on into your college career if you go that route, you know, what you learn about history's basically, but only basically in its broadest contours, true. Mm-hmm. This is the real story. It all relates to this.
So
you're learning your own history of, you know, the family you got adopted into when you came to faith is Abraham's family. We're reading about not just the Jewish forefathers, but our own forefathers.
You know, one of the sentences here, let me find it, Bob, but it really felt like a big hug to me was when...
Like verse 15, behold, I'm with you.
That's the one.
I'll keep you wherever you go.
Behold, I am with you.
I got it.
That's like, a big
got it.
Hug. That
oh,
is a
one
big
of my
monster hug.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite scenes that I saw in life one time. It was in a building, and this mother had a very young boy. You could tell he just learning how to walk. And so they get to this stairway, you know, that's all concrete steps, and to a boy, that height and that size and age, that's ominous.
Right.
To you and me, it's, yeah, there's the stairs, and we hop down them, you know, 2-3 at a time if we want. Well, the mom goes down a couple steps, and then, you know, hey, where's the kid? And turns around and looks back, and he's not going.
Hasn't moved.
He has not, but he's standing on that top step, and you can see, you know, in his eyes, that's ominous. He's afraid. Mm. And the mom just stretches out her hand, which could reach over a couple steps. You know, she could touch him still. And says, I don't remember his name, but come on, so-and-so, I got you. And holds his hand. And the kid, his expression totally melts. And you could see his mind say, okay.
Now it's okay.
And he walked down the steps with his mom. No problem. And that's a lot of what's happening in that verse. You know, I got you, Jacob. And by the way, Jacob's uncomfortable going into this. Just as you and I were uncomfortable last chapter, he knows God's not about deception. And he's got the blessing, but, you know, I faked out my dad to get that.
Right.
So he's not all that comfortable with Yahweh. Mm-hmm. He knows he's offended him. And here's God going, I got it.
Well, and I think that's a good point that you bring up, that all of us should remember. You know, that even though we think we're not worthy, he thinks we're God's everything.
God's got him. We're everything to him. And he's well aware of our sin. It doesn't mean he's excusing our sin. What he's actually going to do, again, to let our listeners know, many of our listeners know this already, but God didn't excuse the lie. What he ultimately did about that was he paid the price for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did. Yes.
So I got it, Jacob.
Not only for this lie, but every other lie out there, and that up till that time, right?
Yeah, every murder,
everything.
I'll pay for it. And you got somebody, by the way, to continue to expand the story, you know, beyond the pages of our text at this point. You got somebody up there in heaven who's accusing Yahweh of transgressing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hey, your boy down there just lied to his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Deceived him. You think I'm the deceiver, but look at your image down there. Looks like a lot of deception to me. So Yahweh has his accusers.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying in his courtroom is, I got it. I'll pay for that.
Well, and I love the ending. And I think it's something that all of us need to remember. Not only the believing God differentiation that we talk about, but this understanding, and you've really helped me, Bob, to understand this, not to just believe in this, but to believe this. And it's the last sentence here in verse 15. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yahweh's name is on the line.
Yeah.
He's not just, in a sense, paying the price for Jacob's deception. He's stepping out on a...
He's sealing limb. The deal.
Yeah. He's going, I'll take this is on me.
And
I'm going to bat for you.
And
how would you like God going to bat for you?
I love it.
You know, like imagine, you know, it's ninth inning, you've been up three times, and you've struck out every time on three pitches. And now it's bases loaded, two outs, and you need four runs, and you're the guy. Would you like to say, hey, God, can you pinch hit for me? That'd be great. And have that pinch hit go on to your account.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Like in the box score, and the next day it's going to read your name.
Your stats.
Would you like God to hit for you? Or do you want to go ahead and try and get a hit this time?
No, you've taught me the moral to that story.
Yeah, that'd be great if God pinch hit for me.
Well, and I...
So that's what he's doing here. I'm going to cover this. Because, as you know, next chapter, it's going to get a little gnarly for Jacob.
Right.
Okay, is that going to be smooth sailing? So this is God telling him ahead of time, I got this.
Well, and isn't... And I don't want to use this word covenant in the same word within the same way that we're talking about, but isn't this the same? Well, and it, let me put it this way: isn't it this the same promise that all of us are given? I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Every single one of us.
Yes, that one does have Christian application directly. What I hesitated on was, you know, we're not promised a chunk of land on the eastern Mediterranean.
Mm-mm.
Okay, that's not for us. Number of our offspring, that's not for us.
Right.
But the spiritual blessing part, that is for us.
I am with you and I will keep you wherever you go.
Absolutely.
I mean, big hug. I mean, that literally, Bob, to me... Yeah, I feel it. I feel the warmth. I feel the embrace in those words. I feel the protection, as you just pointed out, you know, in the shield. I feel that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I really thank God that you've opened my eyes to a lot of these different, not only concepts, but truths. You know, conceptuals are fine.
Yeah.
But recognizing and realizing them as truths, there's two big differences.
Yeah,
in
why
that.
You're really feeling it, taking it into your heart. Like, imagine, you know, back to our illustration, that little boy. You know, imagine if his, you know, mom says, "Yeah, I got you, Tommy," or whatever, and you know, his brain going, "Okay, my mom just said she has me," but those are steps.
Right.
If I fall, I'm going to get hurt big time.
Right.
I just barely learned how to walk. She hasn't even taught me steps yet.
The brain's not even there.
He didn't do that.
Yeah.
He just completely... And it would have been so stupid if he would have done that.
Right.
You would have watched that and marveled if that kid would have backed out of it. It was 100% natural for him to...
Instantaneous.
Oh, okay. Because mom has my hand. And I used to go through that then with Sophia, my daughter, when she was younger. I was going to say young. She's still young. She's 10. But you know how Walmart is the king of marketing?
Right.
And it used to be such a struggle for us to go in there because she would get tugged emotionally by everything that... You know, they know, they put the stuff you need for her in the back of the store.
Oh, yeah, on purpose.
So that you have to walk through the whole store to get what your child needs. And along the way, they're going to try to detour you, right? So here's the Dora Explorer clock. And here's the Blue's Clues blanket. You know, all down those aisles that she's going to have to look at on the way to the diaper rack or whatever the necessity is, you know. And so, you know, the first couple times, I would have to go grab her, you know, and pull her back, and then we got in, she's crying, you know, I want the Dora thing. Well, you didn't know you wanted the Dora thing before we even walked in here. That's not really a need.
Right.
Okay, you're being tempted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really explain that to a 3-year-old, so... The way we would have to do it, that we learned after like a couple trips of disasters through Walmart, then I would say, you know, when we would go in there, I'd say, "Okay, Sophia," and I'd reach my hand down, and she would grab my hand, and then we made it straight to the back. No detours, because she was holding my hand. So, same thing with Jacob in our lives, in reality, is... Jacob really is going to go through some tough stuff. But ever since this night with God, he knows God's got me. God's got it. This will be okay. So in other words, we're going to go through hard times. We're living in a fallen world.
Right.
And the guy who runs our world, according to the scriptures, is not our friend. It's our archenemy. So we have troubles ahead. But as long as you remember, God's got your hand, your back, He's with you. Right? Think of Jesus' name out of this chapter, Emmanuel, God with us. That's what that name means. This chapter is the bedrock of that.
Really? I never knew that, Bob. But I knew Emmanuel because you've taught me that. But I didn't know that was the correlation. Now, I do have another question. So verse 20, and maybe it's just me being picky.
Yeah.
But then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food. That feels
a
little
weird.
Yeah,
like he's hedging.
Yeah, that feels weird to me. Like, if you do this, then I'll do that kind of deal.
Yeah, I just think it's more like, I understand the question, and I had that when I read it, although I didn't have it in my soul. I had it in my mind, you know, going, what's that? What's this if? I don't think it's an if. I know the word says if, but I think it's more like when we get done with this. It's more a when than an if, I think.
Because when I read that, you know, that
because he's very faithful. He sets up. He's not questioning what God just said. He's waiting for the fulfillment of it.
And then when I read that, I was like, huh, well now.
Yeah, I don't think he's hedging. I think it's an act of faith. He's spontaneously reacting. But he knows that's down the road. He's got a long journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lots of things could happen. He knows what God has said, and he's looking forward to that. But there's a long journey. I think it's when, not if.
When?
Yeah.
Makes sense to me, because that really left a question in my mind. But I really... That's what this chapter gave to me was a big, you know, you explain it as, you know, if you the big comfy chair and you jump up on God's lap and He's, you know, starts reading the word to you. I really get that sense in that verse 15. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. And will bring you back to this, not this land, for us.
Mm-hmm.
And for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Mm-hmm. You know, that...
For instance, though, hold, because I know what you're trying to say with that. I think our listeners do, too, but let me... So, I will not leave you until I've accomplished what I promised you.
Right.
That doesn't mean he is going to leave him.
Right.
Okay, brought you back. I'm done.
Yep. Good job.
Know, made my commitment. See what I'm saying? You don't get that sense. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Jacob going,
I get
if this happens,
forever.
I'm going to... It's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. And neither is God saying, as soon as we're done with this, I'm out.
Right.
He's not saying that.
I get that sense that, mm-hmm. that, man, I can hold on to him mm-hmm. forever.
That's right.
You know, I can hold on to his hand and be led unconditionally, not what's the word I'm looking for here? It's without fear.
Yeah.
Without any fear forever.
Yeah, in total security.
Total security. Great way to put it. Great way to put it.
And, by the way, if it's total security in God's hand, that necessarily implies, given the whole context of the scriptures, there is not security outside of that. Outside of his hand, there is not security. Esau's not secure.
Very true. Because Esau's
there is
not...
only one place mm-hmm. to be eternally secure. That's it. Because many people, the way they calculate security these days is, you know, how much you got in your IRA. You don't have a million in there? You're going to retire pretty soon. What on earth are you going to... You know, their security is their wealth.
Right.
Their insecurity is their lack of wealth. And that's... Scripturally speaking, you know, that is kind of, in a sense, neither here nor there. I'm not minimizing the role of money in our culture, but don't let it take the place of God. Money doesn't secure you. Plenty of people with millions and millions of dollars have gone absolutely broke and ended up on the street. Money is a fleeting thing.
And there's many people that have even kept those millions of dollars
and still been insecure. That's right.
And been empty.
Yeah, that's right.
Now,
so it's not that kind of security.
Now, something that you said earlier that I think, you know, it kind of struck me, and I wanted to remember to bring it up towards the end of this podcast, is that our listeners, you know, will get that. You know, when we were talking about a point, and you said, well, our listeners will get that, and I'm going to throw this out to our listeners, Bob, and, you know, even though we've got a small group of listeners, you know, as well as ourselves, if all of us get it, that's great. We need to carry this podcast out to those who really need this understanding. You know, that it's not second knowledge too. So, you know, I'd like to throw that out to our listeners that, you know, let's get some other people involved in this podcast. Let's get some other people listening to it that maybe don't have that understanding yet, and that can start developing that understanding and understanding, you know, what God's putting down here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a great challenge to our listeners. So let's think about some other stuff, some big ideas from this chapter. Number one, there's this picture of Jacob that's being developed, and just how we, you know, have referred to the Lord's Prayer, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, you know,
mm-hmm.
two levels, and you'd like them to be one. Jacob, the way Moses is going to portray Jacob's life is he often runs into conflict on a human level. He's got a lot of conflict with Esau. He's got conflict with his father, Isaac. He's going to have unbelievable conflict with Laban. It's not going to be over there. He's going to run into some other stuff. On the other hand, so keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, he's going to have some encounters with God that are really powerful. And this is the first one, you know, where it's him and God sort of face to face. God's making his promises directly to him, speaking directly
mm-hmm.
to him. So the real way to view Jacob biblically is this. His encounters with God are going to allow him to prevail in his conflicts with humans.
Say that again.
Jacob's encounters with God are going to enable him or allow him to prevail in his conflicts with humans.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Now I can get that. I understand it, yeah.
So, to take that into our lives, our encounters with God through the Scriptures are going to enable us to prevail in our conflicts with humans. But you're going to see that over time. Right? Like, he's going to take, in a sense, some blows from Laban. Mm-hmm. He's going to come out just fine. This is going to be a rocky road for Jacob, but he's going to come out just fine because of his encounters with God.
So then it's not a prayer lottery that we win if we pray and
yeah. I mean, he's got a tough life. I mean, if I experienced what happened to Jacob, I don't know what I would do.
Right.
I mean, I cannot imagine, you know, it's, you know, to jump the gun and get into the next chapter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kathy and I walked down the aisle. If I woke up the next day and I was actually married
to her sister.
I mean, Kathy's got great sisters, so.
Right. You've done okay, right.
But, hey.
Still.
What is the deal? You know, that's a gigantic...
But it had to have been... part of Plan A because, you know,
yeah,
it works,
we'll
right?
Talk about that again, but what my point at this stage is, Jacob's going to overcome that. It's a pretty big thing to overcome.
Hurdle?
Pretty big hurdle.
Steeple?
He's going to get over that because God's with him.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, to carry it just one step further, you know, for us to remember, we can overcome our hurdles too because God is with us.
Same way.
You know, it's that same promise in Genesis 28:15. I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you.
That's
you know,
right.
Take out the land and we have the same...
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not... And I need to put this in a time frame for ourselves and for our listeners. The first hurdle was 7 years. So it doesn't... What we're saying does not mean, hey, man, when you wake up tomorrow, all your troubles are gone.
Yeah, it's not the
prayer
lottery.
You got over the hurdle.
Right.
No, it's a lifelong journey.
24-7.
24-7 for your entire life, but at the end of that road, which compared to eternity is nothing. It is like waking up tomorrow.
Right.
In the huge context of all of time. But no, it doesn't mean your life's automatically going to be better tomorrow or next week. Or it's going to be a long battle. But God's got it. Those steps that little boy walked in, it wasn't like he took the first step and he was done. There's 13 of those.
Well, and better is a relative statement, right? You know, mm-hmm. It's the relationship mm-hmm. that you're putting that into.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in most cases, when you realize, well, just speaking from my own perspective, but when you realize that you're not better, you're well. You know, you were never sick. I don't know how. I have the vision in my mind, but I can't put the words on what I want to say. You know, you thought you were scarred, but you really weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been there the whole time. Mm-hmm. That I'm sure that you've seen it as well as our listeners, the footprints in the sand.
I love that illustration.
That's, you know, as we were reading this, I'm seeing that. I've got a deeper understanding for that mm-hmm. now, even though I really understood it then. Now I can relate it biblically,
mm-hmm.
you know, to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is. He made us that promise. That promise now, he's reiterated this covenant. And this is just me, you know, my observations. He's reiterated this covenant to Abraham over and over and over and over and over again. That's the same quote-unquote covenant that gets reiterated to us mm-hmm. over and over again throughout the Bible.
Yeah, and we'll have to talk about the covenants, you know, one of these days, but that's right. The Abrahamic covenant is the... If you view the entire scriptures, you know, allow me this illustration. No mm-hmm. illustration is perfect.
Right.
I'm already thinking of caveats to it, but forget those for now. Just take the picture. If you view the 2,000 pages of the Lord's holy words, you know, delivered to mankind as a human body, the Abrahamic covenant is the spine
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
that thing.
And I'm really getting a sense for that as we're reading the word deeper.
Yeah.
You know, we've taken Genesis and we've broken it down pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's...
Imagine him saying, you know, to Abraham, in you all the nations will be blessed. That's you and me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's ultimately Christianity. So, yeah, it's the family that we got adopted into.
All right, my friend. Pray us in.
Okay, let's pray. Lord, just as when Jacob... had a clear revelation of you. You appeared to him. face to face, as it were, his response was to worship. And pour oil on a stone and declare that this indeed was the house of God, Bethel. So in our lives, as we come face to face with you, in the scriptures, in your words to us, both living and active, able to pierce our innermost divisions of our soul and spirit, we pray that in response we would worship and acknowledge you as the one true God and the source of our eternal security. And we rejoice that you will be with us no matter where we are, and that you will complete your purposes for us.